This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geeks, show number 253, recorded on March 24th, 2016. Here at Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that news reviews, product updates, and conversation all through the Average Tech Guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska. And of course, we post the show. And by the way, it's good to be back in Bellevue, Nebraska. I spent the last couple days in Washington, D.C. It was beautiful there. I'm not going to lie, but I came home with some windy conditions. Mike, it like almost snowed here. Like they were threatening like 6 to 10 inches of snow or something crazy like that.
Yeah, my car was iced over this morning. It was like pure ice. It wasn't fun. It's crazy.
No,
Nebraska
was weird.
They had a blizzard warning, a winter storm warning, and a tornado watch all in the state at the exact same moment.
Yeah, so as I was flying in from Chicago, I could see the storm system above us, and it was light. It was weird. It was like cold and rainy, but lightning, and it was just bizarre. And I know up north of us in Wisconsin, some areas got as much as 10 inches of snow, which is not that unusual for a spring. You know, every once in a while we get these freak spring storms up north here. And so anyways, we escaped it here in Bellevue, but I know other places got hit by snow as well. Don't forget, you can also join the live, you can join us live using the new mobile app. Get this easy to subscribe to Matt app and the buttons that are available out there to get it downloaded to your phone. Super easy. Just remember homegadgetgeeks.com, and if you check that out, just really, seriously, it's just one or two clicks and you are subscribed. Of course, Home Gadget Geeks is a part of the Geeks Network. You can find the link to this show and many other great podcasts out at the geeksnetwork.com. All right, we got a variety show set for you tonight, so hang tight. We're going to talk about a lot of different stuff. Before we get started, though, our friend Brian Freelander is back to talk about all kinds of crazy stuff. Brian, thanks for coming out. Welcome to the show.
It's great to be back.
Good to have you. Mike Weger is back. Maybe not the greatest day for Mike Weger, but Mike, welcome back to the show.
We're hanging in there. We're really close to just being done with the semester, and that's just all I'm looking forward to. So,
well, most of the United States is on spring break or just got off spring break with the kids. When I was in D.C., it was the cherry blossoms time in D.C., and there were kids on spring break, and there were buses, and usually I go to December in the bad months. I go in, you know, October, and I come back in February, and nobody's traveling in those days, so I kind of have the city to myself, which is kind of nice. Not so much in March, apparently, when I got there, and there was a lot more people. By the time I got home last night, I got home about 9 or about 11:30 last night, I was done with people. I texted Sarah, I never want to fly again.
Just wanted to get home, go to bed.
Well, we had that storm coming in, and so we were coming right into the teeth of it. And so the plane, you know, is, you know, just flopping around and bumpy. And I hear this noise in front of me that's just not pleasant, you know. And the gal in front of me just got deathly sick. Like, she couldn't. She had to call for a wheelchair.
To get off.
She was so sick. She just sat there. Yeah, so it was pretty brutal coming in last night at 11:30. But so it's good to be home, good to be back. And I don't have another flight planned. I'm supposed to go out to California this summer for a reunion. And it's going to take me a lot, I think, to get back on a plane. Or
it
even
was
to think
that
of
bad,
it.
Huh?
Oh.
I've traveled all spring. This has been my busiest spring ever. I've been to D.C. twice. I've been out later in the fall. Brian and I are Microsoft MVPs. And, of course, we were out at Summit in Seattle, and so we were out for that. I feel like I've been all over. I have flown so much this year. I'm just sick of it. It's like, so I'm hoping to get a long break ahead here. Well, hey, Brian, real quick, we're going to talk about some podcasting stuff because I want to get some feedback from the listeners. But before we do that, let's catch up on you. I'm trying to remember the last time you were on last fall. I want to say it was like October, maybe. Was it before Summit? Or when was it, August?
Maybe, yeah.
A list. I could just look it up. While I'm doing that, just catch us up. Let's just say since Summit, what's been keeping you busy?
I've done a couple of presentations at the Microsoft Store, doing some stuff on PowerPoint and Office Mix for e-learning, which has been great. Been doing a lot of workshops and demonstrations, working with teachers, as you know, a lot of schools are moving to the Chrome platform, so I've been doing a lot of training on that. As well as just playing with some new tools as well. I am anxiously awaiting my Echo Dot, that's for sure.
That's going to be cool. That is something I'm looking forward to.
Right.
As well.
And yeah. I've been testing out the new Microsoft Wireless adapter too, the Miracast adapter, and it's worked out really great. I mean, this week I went into a school district. They had an Epson projector mounted from the ceiling with a HDMI and a USB port. I just plugged it in, and off I was running with my my Surface Pro 3 for the presentation. So it's been great. It stayed connected. The connectivity was I thought was really quite good. The audio came through. So it's really nice to product to keep in your bag when you're traveling, because of it's ease of use, and it's a little bit smaller than the original one, which is really nice.
Yeah, well, hold on to that. We'll dig in a little bit here as we go into the show. So I'm looking at the list. Could it really be last year that we had you? Has it been a year?
Possible. It is possible.
Maybe because I saw you in November. Maybe I'm confusing. I'm confusing that with. It's hard to believe a year goes by that fast.
It's unbelievable. Man.
You know, when you think about it. So, well, hey, I want to talk a little bit. We started in pre-show talking about this, and since we've got folks listening, it's one of those things. I wonder where. And Brian, you're kind of a podcast listener, so I'm going to bring you in from this. Mike and I are podcasters, and Mike and I are both having this feeling, as we think about the ecosystem or the concept of tech podcasting. When I started doing this 6 years ago, when Mike started doing it a couple years back, well, Mike, it was still a little diluted when you guys started, but you were naive and blind so, to it. Lately, when we think about tech podcasting in general, there's so much noise going on in the space today when we think about the way people get their news.
Right.
And so Brian, as a podcast listener, I mean, when you think about what you listen to around tech, what are you listening to? And maybe not specific shows, but what types of shows, what kind of things are keeping you engaged in the podcasting space? And what are you listening to generally?
I listen to the Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo.
And that's to get your kind of basic Windows news.
Yeah, to see what's going on. I also listen to The Verge, podcast. So I get a kind of a glimpse as to what they're doing.
Another mainstream, big, gigantic podcast, right? From that standpoint.
Yeah, like The Verge. And then I listen to some kind of oddball kinds of things. There's one I listen to that talks about, working remotely in the workplace, just to get some ideas. And then I listen to one called The Pen Addict, which is really interesting. It's kind of just, these two guys, Brad and Mike, and they talk about, collecting pens and stationery and pencils. And it's,
I think it's very niche, but
I like the interaction, and I kind of look forward to listening to them. And I think there's something, I always loved radio. I think there's something very personal about the experience. I think podcasting does the same thing. You feel a certain connectiveness with the host or the guests, And I think I really enjoy that. And plus, I live in an area of New Jersey which is pretty rural and remote, and it's just hard to pull radio signals in. So yeah. I'm constantly, I have my iPhone is just loaded with podcasts. I also listen to The Moth NPR, which is about storytelling. They have different themes, So it's just kind of, interesting. But I do listen to a lot of, like, listen to Walt Mossberg. I do listen to a lot of tech, don't get me wrong. But yeah, I like the interaction between the hosts, and of course I always listen to the Average Guy podcast. I find that really interesting. I mean, the one you had the CEO of the Ring, it's kind of fascinating to listen to their story, you know. I mean, the technology's cool, but it's interesting to hear, like, here's someone that is so successful but was on the brink of disaster, you know. I mean, you know, and so it's just really just interesting story. I mean, it's storytelling, I think, is a really interesting part for me.
Yeah, I saw Jamie on TV the other day, and I thought, oh man, this is the guy we interviewed, and here he is. You know, here he is on TV. There, they've gotten pretty popular. But
yes, yeah.
Mike, when you think about, you know, you're in the Apple space, which is just as crowded as anything else out there. And your thoughts now? I mean, as you're competing against these, what's your motivation to keep going? I mean, what keeps you going in the space? Because there are plenty of other podcasts with much more money and way bigger audiences, so to speak.
And more time. Yeah. You know, what gets me is as I have to miss weeks, those really are the times where I sit back and think, like, man, like, what is the motivation to keep going forward with it? We talked about, and you nailed it, like a year and a half ago when I started this, I was naive and I had no idea what I was doing, and I got into it and I was in it just to have a ball, and I still do have fun. So the fun, I think, is number one motivating factor. I enjoy it, and I like hearing from people. I like having people in the chat room, and so for me it's just fun. It's a break from studying and it gets me out there, and if people enjoy it, and the numbers have kept going up, which has helped the motivation factor. So when they keep going up and it's fun, that's the motivating factor. But I was telling you as we were talking in pre-show, I think it's podcasters now are forced to just really focus and maybe get a niche that no one else is doing. I only listen to my text, my podcasts that I listen to have just flipped. I mean, 180 from what they were maybe 6 months ago. And the one Apple podcast that made the cut was they talk about tips and tricks, and they talk about ways to, and I learn like 10 new things every time I listen. So for me, it's extremely valuable. And there are little tiny things to big, extreme, in-depth parts about the Apple stuff. So that's useful to me. I listen to zero Apple shows about news. None, because I see so much of it on Twitter, I can read about it, and I have to prepare for my own show, so that helps, so I get it there. But I think the motivating factor has changed a lot. And then for me, going into the job I accepted after I'm done with the bar has a million restrictions on what I can do in the public and what I can do outside of things, so having to reconsider over the summer and kind of see where I'm going to take things and see what I can even do has just been another thing of like, man, how do we keep going? But that's another thing too, as it's time, it's people who, I really wish I could be someone who could podcast full time, you know, and I wish it paid a lot of money. I mean, that would just be great. Wouldn't it be awesome if we could do that? But the people that have a lot more time to invest in these things are usually the ones that are going to get more value, more listeners and stuff like that, because they can just put more into it. But that's the thing I'm lacking and I don't have much of. So, and there's no way to change that. And it's only going to get worse as, you know, I look forward to kids in the future and all that sort of stuff. It's just going to get more crazy. So
yeah, it's your tough days are ahead. When you think about all the time necessary. Although you've handled it pretty well through law school. So
yeah, but the new job is like 70% travel. I'm gone Monday through Thursday every week. So it's going to be interesting. But yeah, I don't know. But for you though, Jim, I mean, you know, you brought this up as, you know, the motivating factor of what keeps you going. What's yours?
Yeah, well, you know, for me, one, it's community, right? I mean, I love the community that we have here and being able to talk to them each week. And I think, Brian, what got me thinking about this is you and I were talking about our MVP stuff with Microsoft, right? And whenever I start talking about that, I start thinking, oh, I'm not podcasting about Microsoft enough, and I'm not doing the things I'm supposed to be doing, and I'm not, you know, covering the news like a Windows Weekly, all those things. But I don't know, maybe as we have this conversation, it's always a good reminder, like, why we do what we do here in podcasting, and why, especially with Home Gadget Geeks, Mike, you said to me, well, you know, one of the things that we've done here is get this small guy niche, right? We give some folks an opportunity who may or may not be on podcasts, and, you know, in Ring's case, they've been pretty popular. We kind of lucked out with that interview in some case, but it's kind of bringing in the alternate story. It's bringing the small guy story or the medium, you know, medium.
Kangaroo, market. You know, when we brought in
Great. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. Yeah, but keep focusing on those that are underrepresented from that standpoint, that bring an interesting mix to it. I think of the guys at Bitlit, now Shelfie,
Yep.
I think about some of those, the ones that we've done in that space. And then, you know, I think the other thing that's cool that we do here that I don't see a lot on other podcasts, and Brian, you're a part of this. We bring the community in, right? I mean, we have you on once a year or twice a year or whatever. Right. We had, you know, as I look back, you know, Nathaniel, I look back on Chris Barnes. We look at a guy like Kyle Wilcox who came on. Mm-hmm. You know, Rennie, Andrew, those guys from Australia coming in. We had John Larson, a local guy from Omaha, pop in from AIM. So we get this unique ability to come in here and kind of share these stories. I bring this up in the beginning of the show, because right. not at the end, because not everybody makes it to the end. I'm kind of interested in I don't want to do a survey. Mike, right. I know you. How did your audience survey go? What kind of response did you get back for your audience survey?
Okay, so extremely small number, but still more than last year. It's going up. So we had a decent amount take the survey, and it was really cool what they said. Some people were angry about the schedule, about not being there every single week, and kind of holding, not angry, but just, you know, hey, if we could, you know, at least have a heads up, that would be great. Got a lot of comments on, the great part was that I separated out evaluations from me and Colin so that, you know, I can share this stuff with Colin, say, hey, like, this is kind of what they were saying about you, this is what they were saying about me, what we can improve on. And then the comment section, I was glad that the majority of people put something in there. You know, it's not required. That was the only box that wasn't, but they were able to put some comments in there. And last night's show, I kind of took it and I said, okay, this is a viewer show. Like, I took all the advice and we threw it into one show. We did top fives. We did something that's not about Apple. It's just personal and fun at the end, a fun top five. I just said, okay, that was that. So if you guys liked it, great. But just let you know, that was a compilation of everything that you guys suggested to me. So it was fun. We had fun with it. We did one episode, but really the value was the ratings of Colin and I and being able to see like what we need to work on. That was cool.
Yeah. Good. I do get feedback.
It was weird.
No, that's good. That's good. And I do get feedback from time to time from the audience. It'd be fun, though, to know why you listen. You know, what are you listening for, whether it's in the car? And during the summer, it's funny, I do get notes from guys who are listening from the lawnmower. You know, they're out riding the lawnmower with the earbuds in.
We should start a hashtag how you listen and have them tweet at you. I mean, I've known a lot of their podcasts. And it's really fun to kind of see you take a selfie of how you're listening, where you're listening, and send that in. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. No, that'd be interesting. Although I think just send me an email, jim@theaverageguy.tv. Yeah. It would be interesting. That's probably the best way. We've got it. I haven't, this audience is not engaged in Twitter or Facebook. Some have.
Yeah.
Not a lot have. That has not been great for me. But send me an email, jim@theaverageguy.tv. Love to know why you listen. And I still think I have the best listeners on the planet. They're content for the most part. They just kind of listen and encourage. When I have a good interview, they let me know. It's kind of fun. And so we kind of have fun in the community. We're getting ready to move next year. And Mike, I'm not going to lie, from time to time, I'm kind of thinking, you know, maybe I'll put the podcast on hold for 6 months to a year, because I really need, you know, right now, like, I'm podcasting. I get up on Saturday mornings and I podcast with Dave Jackson till 11. Then I got to get some lunch. Then I got to produce this podcast. And that goes till about 2.
Yeah.
Wow.
That ruins Saturday, right? Then I'm like, what do you do starting at 2 on a Saturday? And our Sundays get kind of busy as well. And so it's one of those kinds of things I have thought, do I put, you know, I'm busy enough right now. And I have 3 really successful podcasts at work now, which is kind of crazy. And I know most of you who listen probably would not come over to the Gallup side to listen. But I don't know. So, and I'm not, by the way, not saying this because I'm thinking of quitting. This is not that.
Don't right? do that.
It was just one of those things. As we were talking about it, Brian, when we first started saying, like, if I try to keep up with the Joneses, if I try to be the Verge or the, you know, the Leo Laportes, I get super frustrated, demoralized, and I want to quit.
Right.
But, Mike, when you reminded me of some of the cool guests we've had on here and the reason why we do this and the ability to just kind of be us on this, right? We just get to have this conversation.
Well, and the tech side is hard. And the tech side is hard for multiple reasons. The tech side, for just what you said, it's diluted. There's these big, huge productions out there that are doing great stuff. People can get news elsewhere. So like you said, you have the niche, which makes you successful. But also, I mean, entertainment has just blown up in the podcast. You know, once you had Serial, that was the beginning of people realizing that storytelling, entertainment can be done in podcasting. And reality. The free model, the free, quote-unquote, free model of putting it out there for free can work. And man, I thought I wouldn't fall for that trap, but like I said, my podcast that I listen to have flipped 180. Now it's like two tech shows, and all the other are low, small entertainment shows. And it's just because, but your time's limited. I mean, I don't listen to podcasts. I can't listen to podcasts any other time besides my drive, really, at work, at school, and when I'm at home, I'm doing other things. So I've got that chunk set out, and if there's only that limited amount of time, so you got to make the cut. But tech's hard because it's not the growing industry, and you've got to find your niche. But I think we did, so I think that's fun, and that's why I love being a co-host on the show, because I'm having a blast meeting people and talking to people, and we get a lot of fun inter- co-hosts and guests on the show. So,
yeah. Well, an interesting discussion, but if you're interested in sending me some feedback on what you like to listen to, send me a note, jim@theaverageguy.tv, and we'll throw that into consideration. And for right now, I don't have any trouble booking guests. I mean, that's the easiest thing. We've done enough of this now that I can get to folks on and have a pretty wide variety. I mean, apparently I can't remember that we didn't have Brian on but a year ago. So
must that's be one okay. Of the, that's
be one of those. We get Amber on every 3 months, but Brian, I can only get you on once a year.
That's
so.
Okay.
Anyways, hey, let's talk about we just get done doing that, and then we say, hey, well, let's talk about the news. Mike, I do want to, and Brian, you use some Apple products as well. So
yes,
Apple just released 9.3
yes.
on the phone. You know, the software update came to my phone the other day. Do you want to update? I'm like, no. Like, I don't just leave my phone alone. It works. Like, I don't want to screw with it. I did update it. But Mike, what should I expect as a, you know, I'm kind of just the Apple, I'm your typical Apple consumer. What's the best three or four things I should expect? And then Brian, I don't know if you've been following it. You can chime in on it as well. But Mike, what should I expect to get with this new update?
Well, when your phone turns orange, like mine just did, it's not a bad thing. So we'll start with that. You can, and this is an opt-in feature, which I thought was really cool. I thought Apple was going to do kind of just a standard feature, but this is opt-in called night shift mode. And I think we've talked about this a little bit on the show. Maybe we haven't, but it is that trend of blue light causes your brain to be active at night when you're trying to go to sleep. So lowering the amount of blue light you're getting can actually help you fall asleep easier. And we all have our phones usually in our face till right about the time we go to bed, especially if you're using it as an alarm, it's the very last thing you see. So if you go in and turn it on, it's under the display settings, and you can actually, it's kind of a little bit wonky. At first I didn't want to set a time that it turns on and turns off, so if you tap that, one of the options is sunrise and sunset. So I did mine to sunrise, sunset, and you won't be able to see it on the camera, so I won't show you, but it does shift the colors to the warmer end of the spectrum on your display. So you will notice it'll look discolored. Yes. Hannah didn't know about the feature, and she asked why my phone was orange. She's like, well, what happened to your phone? And I'm like, well, I'll show you. And so it's a nice feature. It's only for iPhone 6 and above, so if you have anything below that, supposedly, it's not going to work for you. Other improvements were...
Wait, one sec before we go on that. So here's the weird thing about that. I think I mentioned this on a podcast too. I've got that running on my desktop as well, and I forget the name of that.
Let's go Flux or something?
Flux, thank you.
Flux.
It's Flux. Brian, have you used that before on your... Have you used a Flux?
No, I did play around with it on my iPhone, but I haven't played around with the Flux.
So what's really weird is I'll be here all night working in this tinted, you know, and then the monitor next to it doesn't run Flux, and I turned it on, and I thought I'd broken the monitor. It was blue. It was so blue. Right? You're like, oh, how did that? It's such blueness, you know, especially Windows, right? There's a lot of blue in Windows.
Yes,
right?
There is.
And so, yeah, Mike, I thought I broke things. So that's one of those things you got to be careful of. The other thing you have to be careful of, if you're doing video content, it will absolutely change the color of the video. And so you have to kind of make sure that's turned on or turned off if you're trying to do color correction.
Good tip. Yeah.
Some of those kinds of things. So something to be just and yeah, Mike, I just turned that on, and sure enough, well, you can't see it here, but you get that little yellow or
yellowish
orange haze.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It is nice, though. I'll be honest with you. I have less eye fatigue at nights than I'm sitting here. In front of the desktop, it's just easier on your eyes. You look at that blue stuff, and you're like, oh, man, that's bright.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay, what else, Mike?
Just running through, there wasn't too many like big features. That was like the main big feature they had. But notes are now more secure. You can now lock down notes with your thumbprint with Touch ID, which is kind of nice for if you do have those private store notes where you're storing credit card information, social ID numbers, anything like that. It's kind of nice to be able to lock those down. sad part is a lot of us already have a third-party app that will do that, you know, if we're storing it in LastPass in the secured notes or something like that. But good to know that it's just there for you, for everyone in the notes. Also,
so
newsstand...
My notes... Oh, I'm sorry. One sec. Yeah. My notes say... You can't read it, but my note says, and I must have said this a while back, I hate you, Siri, and you're the devil. That's what that says.
Might have been when you first switched over your test.
I think you can see that right
yes,
there.
Yep. Yes, you can.
And you're the devil. All right, keep going, Mike. Sorry.
Yeah, news got a little bit more personalized. You know, they're really trying to push this news app, and it's kind of a curated. When I first thought of it, think of a Flipboard competitor. If you're a Flipboard user at all, you will easily be able to adapt the news. It's a little bit more personalized and some under the hood improvements there. But really, you know, the health was kind of the coolest thing from the announcement from 9.3 and all this stuff with the introduction that they're going to be putting CareKit in. CareKit being, they've had HealthKit, which tracks all of your health data, but they've been struggling with, you know, kind of, okay, how do we use this data in a better manner than it's just being stored there? So in the past, they've come out with some more initiatives to do this. You know, we saw research studies where they could put an app in front of a child, and the child would be watching a video tracking their facial cues of what their face is doing, and it might be able to help them out diagnose at a very young age if they have a learning disability or if they have Down syndrome, anything like that. It can just kind of help those sort of things. So kind of CareKit is really cool, and it's something I really like. And it's when you think of interaction with your doctor and your doctor updating your care plan after you have surgery, things like that, that's going to be coming in the future, which is really cool. But as far as 9.3 goes, those were kind of some of the main updates, but there's a lot to look forward to. And also, if you're in the education side of things, 9.3 got a big update. I'm not a big education user, so I can't speak to exactly how incremental it was, but a nice way of engaging with your students in classes and setup, especially for iPads. So classes that have iPads distributed to all the students, they're making it a lot easier for teachers to be able to use those in a functional manner and use them in the education world. So a lot of cool things that came out with 9.3, but a lot more cool things to look forward to, especially with CareKit. I think we're starting to see a big emergence of health being important, and now that we have all these devices, I mean, I'm strapped with my watch, my phone, things that track me all the time. And if I gave the example last night, I got the typical printout sheet after my surgery of what I should be doing at home, and then I would go to PT for the first time, and they give me another printout of what I should be doing. But I have a device that can track exactly what my gait is, how my walk is doing, if I'm limping, if I'm doing sort of things. So if I could have that tracked, sent to my PT or my surgeon, and then they could update me with an updated care plan. Okay, now you're starting to be a little bit more weight-bearing, and you're looking like you're limping a little bit. Maybe it's time to get rid of the crutch. Sort of things like that. That would be really cool, and I think all that stuff is going to be definitely possible in the future, and that's kind of where they're going with the CareKit, is that next level of integration with all the health data that they've already been gathering.
And my understanding, too, is that a physician got FDA approval for, you know heart monitoring, which is kind of interesting, too, in terms of the telemedicine. I think you're going to see, you know, iPhones and, you know, the smart watches play a bigger part in that as well.
Definitely. Any aspect that they can touch and get approval for, I think, will be fantastic.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Brian, in your space, where you're helping people out with technologies, especially in the school space, I'm going to dig in on Chrome here in a second, but what's the division, you think, and just give me some big round numbers between Microsoft, Google, and Apple when we think about devices in those spaces? Who's dominating? What do we see the most of being? I mean, iPads seem to be a big deal for a long time, and then hearing about that as much anymore.
No.
That doesn't, it's not. Stop
right.
hearing about it as much anymore. Right. So, what are you seeing?
Well, I mean, I think the trend is definitely a lot of schools are moving to Chromebooks because of the cost and because of the need for devices to take online assessments, whether it be the PARC assessment, which tends to be more on the East Coast, or Smarter Balance, which is on the sort of the West Coast. And it's kind of interesting too, even in schools that are, on the Windows platform, a lot of them are moving to the Google Apps for education. So, you know, they're using Chrome, if they use a Chrome browser, they'll tie into that. And the same thing Macintosh as well. But I've seen some really, loyal Apple, school districts who've been Mac for the longest time are beginning to take in Chromebooks because of, you know, the bottom line and, also the functionality. I think if a school district that jumped into the iPads, one of the biggest problem, and I think, you know, it may be a little too late, but 9.3 does solve the issue of logins and, you know, that the profiling and things like that. But, you know, if you speak to most tech specialists or, you know, IT people in the schools, they'll tell you that, you know, iPads have been really challenging to manage. And whereas, you know, Chromebooks are, you know, I mean, are a piece of cake. And I think that's a big factor as well, you know. And so I think if school districts, you know, went full hog on the iPad, they're pushing them down to elementary school and then middle school, high school students, they're moving the Chromebooks into that space. But I think one of the big apps that is really significant is Google Classroom. And that's a kind of it's a lightweight, but a workflow for teachers that's pretty incredible when you think about what you're able to do and what teachers are able to do. And for those kids that, because I work with a lot of kids who have attention deficit disorder or executive function disorder, I mean, having, you know, everything in one place, assignments, you know, dates when things are due, discussions is just incredible, really is incredible.
No, it's what's interesting is I ask you the question, you know, so why? Is it pure price point alone? And it's part of it, but it was interesting. You told me keyboards, and that, yes. You know, when you think about an iPad, you got to put a keyboard on it.
Exactly.
Even on the Surface, you got to put a really expensive keyboard.
Yeah.
You know, on it, you can, you know, you can get away on an iPad. You can get away with a cheap knockoff for probably $40 or $50. You know, some kind of retro that works with the iPad. With the Surface, you're pretty much stuck with the $130 keyboard. Right.
Yeah.
If you're going to get a decent one to get it done. So really, it comes down to a Chromebook that's $179.
Yeah,
a screen, a keyboard, and a browser, right?
That's it.
Is that simple?
It's that simple. And the management side is a simple dashboard that is very, very easy, to use.
Isn't it interesting that the login would be one of the pieces that gets the iPad when we think about it? You know, Windows had that concept.
Yes.
It had that concept forever.
Yes.
Of course, it came, I think the guys at Google just adopted that from day one, right? It was just one of those things. But it seems, and Mike, it seems to me that our friends at Apple have been very resistant to that kind of username login sign-in thing, right? I mean, am I wrong there?
No, it's always been a challenge. I actually went to a high school that was, you know, right at the beginning stages of this one-on-one program or one-for-one program where we all had a Mac laptop.
Right.
And it was ours for the entire 4 years you go through. And just after coming out and seeing the challenges from the IT side of things and all the stuff they were dealing with, first of all, just talk about price. And how do you refresh these things? And how do you give a four-year-old laptop back to a freshman while some of them are getting brand new laptops and all that sort of stuff? I mean, how do you deal with all of this sort of stuff? And the login thing, I just tell you, I think 9.3 is just a prayer answered for a lot of these IT systems managers. But you're so right about iPads not being the complete right answer. And number one, price point. You could get laptops. And number two, like you said, keyboards. And even now, pencils. You could argue the pencil might be a very integral part to some of those iPad Pros. And then file management. I mean, these getting those files from here back and forth. And I know a lot of outside third-party apps. When I think of PowerSchool was one of them back when I was younger in these systems where you're uploading files to teachers and they're grading you, you're really having to sometimes adopt a system that is only available on Mac and on the iPad.
Right.
Or, you know, so it's really just, it's not the best system. Whereas if you do have that full desktop experience, either from a Chromebook or from a full laptop from Apple or anything like that, your options are, you know, more plentiful. But it's a pain. And I hate to see Apple get away from making it easy for people because they had such a good initiative a while ago, back when I was in high school. I mean, this was, when I was a freshman, that's almost 11, 12 years ago, and you're starting to, I mean, it was kind of a big push for them, and my school bought into it, and they spent a lot of money investing in an infrastructure that kind of fell away from them a little bit, and being able to replace those devices when they go down and stuff, it was just more of a pain than it was a help. So it's interesting to see how we're going to deal with that, but I think Chromebooks are a fantastic option for students. I think they're one of the best.
It's Brent, easy.
You feel that way? I mean, you've worked in all three.
I can't say it's the best. It's not. I mean, it's not something I'd pick up when I go. Like, if I leave the house, I'm not going to leave with a Chromebook. I mean, I just feel for me, it's too confining. You know, I'd rather take my Surface Pro with me. You know, if I'm traveling, but I always carry an iPad and my Surface Pro with me. I mean, that's, you know, so, and it's kind of funny. I mean, I do a lot of writing, and so I could use, you know, Word on the iPad. I still prefer the experience on the either Surface 3 or the Surface Pro when I'm doing, like, my work. I still feel a little constrained, you know, on the iPad to do that, though I could. I'm not saying I couldn't, but it just feels more comfortable to me on the Surface Pro or the Surface 3.
Well, I think the restrictive nature, too, of the Chromebook sometimes isn't a bad thing for young students.
Right.
You know, for young students to be, I think the administration of my high school when we were going through, and, you know, I think the kids were sometimes a little bit ahead of some of the other stuff, and they would have liked us to be a little bit more restricted and not been able to do some of the things we were able to do with a full-blown laptop.
Right.
So, but you're right on, to some extremes, it's not going to work out in all instances.
Yeah. But on the other hand, you know, I've been in the field of special ed technology for over 30 years, and to see what they're developing that works inside a browser is just, it's mind blowing to me. Like, to think that you could have all this functionality in what were, you know, previously programs you'd have to install off a CD on a Mac or a Windows is, like, pretty amazing. And, you know, even if you're not using a Chromebook, I would still make the recommendation for certain students to use the Chrome browser on a Mac or a PC because of the functionality and because of the fact that that student's profile moves with them. So they could go home, log in to their Chrome browser, and then all the tools that they need are available to them, which is, you know, kind of a new paradigm. You know, years ago, schools would have to actually physically go to someone's home and install a piece of software. Now, it just follows with them, and, you know, costs are reasonable. I mean, yeah, schools have to get used to a new way of thinking because most of these are annual subscription fees, but, you know, even so, it's still, the cost is, you know, much less than what it was like when you had to install applications on a Mac or a Windows computer. Yeah. So it is exciting. It's exciting times because of these developments. It really is.
It's interesting. The schools have kind of caught up, though, to this. Like, what some of the things the schools are doing, they're kind of behind the consumer when it comes to how fast the consumer's moved. And now we're seeing this big push in education to get this done, primarily driven, I think a lot of it, what you said, is driven by standardized testing, right?
Yes.
The testing has gone completely online.
Well, online, yes.
You have to have some kind of device the kids can use. I wonder have you seen how are districts that are in low income or have those budget restrictions or trouble, how are they handling it when they're mandated to do these things online? Do you know? Have you any experience with that?
They're buying Chromebooks by and large. Yeah. They budgeted, or, you know, sometimes they even have to float bonds, not only for the devices, but for the infrastructure. That's been the biggest challenge. Now, you know, imagine you have, I don't know, let's say you have a middle school and you have 1,000 students, I mean, that are using it at the same time. I mean, so really, you know, beefing up the infrastructure has been, you know, one of the goals that most schools have at the top of their list, so they can make this work. You know, you can imagine 1,000 students, you know, on Chromebooks, you know, uploading information to the same portal. What kind of impact that has on your network?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Nathaniel can talk about that. He has come on. He's in one of those districts where they do that. Yeah.
Yep.
And so, you know, we try to have him on twice a year and kind of get an update on what's going on there. It's just interesting. I kind of had got the feeling the Chromebook day was pretty much done.
No, it's just
no.
Just no. I don't think it has. I don't think it has peaked at all. I think it's.
But do you think it's the same on the consumer side? I mean, are all these sales driven by schools? Because consumers aren't buying Chromebooks at this point, right?
No, it's schools are buying. I mean, I think you have families that go, they have young kids, oh, you know, let's buy this, it's inexpensive, kids can play online games or, you know, whatever, do a little word processing. But, you know, by and large, it's the schools that are buying. I mean, thousands at a time, you know, it's not like, you know, they're buying, you know, a small quantity.
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I don't think they're over. I think they were too early in some aspects. I think because we were just talking about how the browser, how much more useful it is now and all the things that you can do in the browser, I think you'll see a resurgence of the Chromebook. I think it was too early. It wasn't useful enough. You couldn't do enough with it. Now look at all the things you can do in a browser. If it wasn't for podcasting, I would be able to never leave my browser. on my laptop. It is everything I do. You can do, even on the Mac side, you can do Word, or Pages, Numbers, Keynote, all in the browser. You can do everything in there. And especially if you use the Google system, everything's in the browser. So I think they're a little bit too early if you're going to, you know, say anything about them. So I could see them having a resurgence in the consumer market, just like we're seeing the low-powered Kangaroo. You know what I mean? How that is a viable option now for people who are okay with the browser. You could have Chrome be the next big thing. Like, yeah, another option for people who don't need all those options.
I agree, Mike. I think what's happening too is a lot of computers are aging out in the schools, and I think they will be replaced by Chromebooks. And I think you're going to see that as well. I mean, some of the numbers that I've seen are just incredible in terms of the sales of Chromebooks. It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Well,
what I find interesting when we think about the ecosystem is if you buy Windows and you're in the Windows ecosystem in school, you're making the assumption that you're used to this environment and you're going to move into it when you go into work.
Right,
and that's
right.
Kind of true. Same with the Mac ecosystem. The Chromebook ecosystem does not lend itself that way. You're just in a browser that you could use on a Mac or a PC when you leave, right? So it's interesting. This doesn't guarantee, I think, from a Google perspective, that as soon as kids leave the education environment, I mean, Microsoft gives away thousands of dollars in software and hoping that users will use Visual Studio and use C Sharp and those kinds of things. Mac or Apple, in the same way, gives these discounts because they want students to buy Macs when they get out of school. But I don't think that's true on the Chromebook side.
You know, I think there's a market for it a little bit. When people go into college, I can tell you in the university setting right now, Google Docs, Google everything is the way everyone has gone. I mean, almost, I would say 99% of my law school class uses Google Docs when we need to do collaboration projects. They have all Gmail accounts. They pretty much use as much Google as they can. And then even, so just at least in university, now maybe not in the, you know, corporate setting. You know, there's not going to be that Google adoption. I can't get to my Google stuff where I work right now, so I'm all blocked out. But on the other hand, too, when I was talking to these really small shops and helping them out with their stuff, Google Apps for Work was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Wait, we can have our personalized email. Everyone gets all these accounts. We're all shared, and it's all just easy to use. And I was like, yeah. And a lot of them were like, wow, that's pretty cool. So maybe not on the enterprise side, but on the small shop side, they've got a market there at least for people to say, hey, I've already used Gmail. I've already used Google Docs. Now I can use this in a professional environment. Yeah, let's give it a try.
But where I teach, we're basically a Windows shop, but we use, you know, we're also, you know, Google Apps for Education. You know, we use that as well, though we still have Microsoft Office installed on all our PCs, you know, so we're kind of living in both worlds. And
I think Google loves that.
Yeah, and
we don't make money on the hardware.
Yeah, our email is now, you know, basically Gmail, you know, so which has been really good. I mean, it's been up 99.9% of the time, and you know, it's saving the college a tremendous amount of money. I mean, you know,
definitely.
Yeah. So
you know what it reminds me of when we think about this, kind of in the days of Novell. When we, you know, before Windows, a lot of people don't, I mean, we always think of file and file stores and file shares as being something Microsoft has dominated, and it hasn't. You know, in the early days of PC, Novell was the one who controlled the networking space. You had Novell servers that were file servers for stuff, and that's how you logged in, right?
Yes.
You had a Novell login that you used, and it really wasn't until, you know, I'm going to want to say even the, you know, the 2000 XP era, when Windows servers began to take over and everyone kind of moved because they realized they could get all that in one environment, moved to Windows. So it's kind of interesting as we think about these ecosystems, you know, and how they work, and we think, oh, this could be around forever. Maybe not. You can make a shift. I mean, some of these things could shift very, very quickly.
On a dime, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah,
especially when you look at Google and you look, okay, it's free, and when people start to understand why it's free, and all the things they are doing with your information and ads and all that stuff, that's a lot of the reason. I mean, that is the reason corporations don't go with it, because they need something more secure. So I think there is another thing of, you know, there's going to be a wave of privacy where all the kids, that's not cool to use them because they're using my information. And they're going to go off, and then they're going to pay for everything. You know, there's going to be these waves. And other Jim in the chat room said it perfectly, but will the kids think it's uncool to use Google in 12 years? And totally. That's what we're talking about. That wave could totally go in the opposite direction.
That is funny.
It's going to be the face Facebook. You know, it could be the Facebook. We're all none of the kids now use Facebook.
And what's old is new, and what's new is old, right?
Yeah, right.
From that standpoint. So, well, Brian, that's interesting. I mean, because I had not, until you started talking about this, I had kind of had the impression, Chromebooks are kind of, they were here, they've had their day. But it sounds like what you're seeing, there's just a, what's going on behind the scenes because of budget constraints and mandates,
yes. Uh-huh.
They're just buying them. And maybe that's where the fanboy disappears and the necessity and the need based on budget just appears. Because it's not like, oh, I
yeah,
love
I mean,
you.
There,
it's like we have to have it. Right?
Yeah. There have been some very – there is a one of the schools in Philadelphia, I think it's called SLA, and they have sort of been one of the, you know, highlights of the Philadelphia school system, and they were a Macintosh shop, and I think it was about 2 years ago, the principal announced that he had had a contract with Dell to bring in their Dell Chromebooks, and this was like, you know, unheard of, because they were just, I mean, strictly a Mac shop. And when he was questioned as to why, he said, well, you know, I could buy like, you know, five Chromebooks, you know, for the cost of one Mac, you know, laptop, and with, you know, probably 95% of the functionality that we need. Yeah, there might be certain things like maybe audio, video production stuff we'll do. We're not throwing out the Macs, but for everyday use, he said the Chromebooks were going to work, and so that's what happened, you know. So budget is certainly a big part of it, but again, the functionality within the browser is improved. Just, it's like I said, it's incredible. I can't believe we can do some of the things that we can do inside the Chrome browser as well.
Yeah. No, we live a lot in the browser, even on the PC side.
Right. Yes.
I live in Chrome all the time. I mean, that's,
I know.
Probably 90% of my work is in Chrome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so let's, Mike, anything else you want to add to that conversation before we flip over to, we've given Mac, it's Apple, it's time. We're going to talk a little Microsoft. Anything else, Mike?
I'm down to talk about some Microsoft.
All right. So,
cool.
Brian, let's talk about Microsoft really quick.
Okay.
And you're on the Surface side. We've seen the Surface Book. We have seen a Surface Pro 4.
Yes.
What are you feeling in the Surface space? This summer should be a refresh of some kind. What are we thinking? What are you thinking?
I mean, again, I have, you know, like you, we have no inside knowledge.
Zero.
But I mean, I would have hoped maybe it's still coming for like a Surface 4, you know, like a refresh of the Surface 3. I don't think we'll see a Pro 5 until probably the fall. That's my best estimate. But I think the Surface 3, we should see a Surface 4, and I think they're pushing, you know, the Surface 3, you know, into the schools as a sort of an economical way to get that tablet in. And I mean, and it has some great features. I mean, you know, the pen and OneNote and OneNote are just absolutely incredible educational tools. And I think some people may not realize the functionality and what it can do in the classroom, but they're just tremendous tools for those schools that, are adopting the technology. But I think, you know, Microsoft understands they need to come out with something as powerful but economical so schools can begin to think about, you know, it as a solution, you know, and that's important.
Don't you think Microsoft has left the lower end to the OEMs, though, from this standpoint, that
they're
not going to compete in that space? They're going to keep things pretty expensive and let HP and Dell kind of handle the low end?
I guess, but, you know, I think, you know, I mean, I still think there are some schools that want the right solution at the right price and, you know, maybe forego the, you know, $179 computers because they know that, you know, a Surface can, you know, outperform, especially with the pen. And, you know, like for math and science, there's nothing better than a Surface, you know, even at that price point, really, when you think about it. So, I mean, I think there are some schools that, you know, may look at what is it that we want to accomplish, what are our goals, and look at a solution that makes the most sense. Because, I mean, the tool, in some sense, does dictate what you can do with it, you know. I mean, you really can't, you know, you can't do any handwriting, you know, on a Chromebook. I mean, that's the reality of it, you know.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work, you know. But I think Microsoft's in a tough space. I mean, they're looking, you know, definitely going the high end space, and especially corporations, and they're doing well there. But you don't, I mean, you know, you don't see too many, at least I don't see too many Surface Pros or Surface 3s out in the wild. You know, it's kind of a rare occurrence. I don't know about Mike or, you know, Jim, if you see them. I don't see too
many. I see
many.
Mine. That's all I ever see.
I know. You go into Starbucks, it's all, you know, I mean, you still see a lot of Dells, HP, and you see a lot of MacBooks, but, you know, it's pretty rare that I'll see a Surface in the wild, you know.
Yeah. No, they're just not out there very much. Which is surprising, you know, back in the old days, the PC was for business and the Mac was for artists.
Right.
And now that has switched in some ways, right? Because there of the, some incredible capabilities of the Surface Pro for artists, yeah, and some of the things they're doing. That's actually a better choice in a lot of ways than it is. And mm-hmm. people are taking their Macs to work, right? And so it's completely flipped, where the Mac is now for productivity and the Surface, anyways, is being pitched a little bit as an art device.
Absolutely. And the thing is, too, I mean, I read some interesting articles where, you know, Apple's sort of dropping the ball on some of the really high-end computing needs that, you know, video producers or, you know, audio engineers need. And some of these companies are actually turning to Windows devices that they can, you know, add tremendous amount of, you know, the i7s and as much memory and, you know, video RAM and all kinds of stuff, where if you look at, you know, Apple hasn't come out with a pro sort of desktop device. Is it 5 years now, that little, you know, the little cylinder?
The garbage can.
Yeah, whatever.
The garbage can. Yeah, the black.
So they're kind of turning their back to the industry that, you know, really kind of, you know, built them in a way. You know, because they really haven't catered to the high-end user. You know, it needs more power to do what they're doing, which is interesting.
Mike, why is that? Why have they ignored the high-end user? You know, and when I say high-end, I don't mean money high-end. Everybody who buys a Mac has to buy a high-end, right?
Yeah, right.
Let's just get that done. It's the high-end price. But they haven't really catered. I mean, the gaming community, not at all. Everybody in the gaming community is on Windows.
Yeah. I think it's because they like control. You know, they have the Mac Pro. They have the Mac Pro, and for those people who are willing, who need that much power, they're doing it for video editing. These are pro shops doing that sort of stuff. So they have the Mac Pro. They don't care about the gaming community, I don't think, because it's already wrapped up in Windows. There's not many games, honestly, on the Mac side. When I go to play a game, there's some, and there's some places do it, but not many of them. I think they're just letting that market go, but I have no clue why they did. But look at it. You couldn't even buy one of those systems and upgrade it if you wanted to. The RAM soldered to the board. You couldn't upgrade it. So. Which is kind of interesting because I'm going to, in the future, my next build is going to be a Windows box. And next time I spend a significant chunk of money, going to be...
Are you okay, Jim? Are you okay?
I'm not going to stop using my Mac. I have my iMac, which is a fantastic machine that will last for a long time. But I wanted to see how much I could get out of this with the same exact money, you know, for, let's say, $2,000 that you would spend on one of the iMacs now, which is what I would go with. You know, what kind of – I could get a super high-end Windows and have both. So it's kind of fun.
Right.
Yeah, I think both have their niches.
Yeah, I heard that, at the present time, there is not a Macintosh that can run an Oculus Rift that has the horsepower to drive it. And the only thing you can drive it with is with a Windows device.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Well, it is. It's a weird world sometimes when you think about that. You know, when you think about that's another area. You know, the Mac when it first came out was all games. I mean, we played games on. If you wanted to play games, some of the PCs had some games, but the good games were on Mac. And now it's the other way around in some ways, right? All really, Steam has changed everything. When we think about games on the PC, I think most everybody, at least my kids, if I just speak for my kids, the first thing that goes on is Steam. And then they start gaming.
Yeah, and it was case in point when we first got to college and StarCraft III had just come out, and me and two buddies were going to play some, and I had my brand new, you know, from graduation, pretty expensive new Mac laptop, and they were running it on PCs that were maybe half the price, and my graphics couldn't keep up. I was trying to play it with them, and it's just like, man, this is just, it was insane. And for the price point, it was frustrating to me. That was kind of my first frustration moment. But man, as I've started to play around with Windows 10, Jim really, he did a good job. He got a Windows 10 in front of me that I really enjoy using. And now it's like, if I just had iMessage, that's the one app holding me back from being over there, because I like to text and use iMessage from my computer instead of getting out my phone. If that was on Windows, game over for me. I mean, not really game over. I love, I'll always love OS 10, but man.
But my brother's a physician, and he was in Costco one day, and he went up, he picked up a Windows, I think it was maybe a Dell or an HP. It had like 16 gigabytes of RAM, you know, a terabyte, an i7 processor, and I think it was like, you know, $850. You know, I mean, so like tremendous value. I mean, just tremendous value. You know.
Yeah. And if you're willing to build it on your own, even better value. You
know? Probably, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You get more control. And I think that's why the Windows guys, they go to it. So, interesting. Hey, let's talk gadgets really quick. Brian, you gave me this gadget.
Oh, I did,
And I still have it.
That's good. Have you used it?
So, LapWorks. I have a few times. It's interesting when you go on the road. So, basically what it does is it goes corner to corner on any kind of device, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Any kind of, and this one here, I'll show you the box. So, it's LapWorks, right? Was this a buddy of yours, or what's the...
Over the years, I've reviewed several of their products. They built years ago. They built devices for laptops to keep them cool, and then they developed cases for the iPad, and then they came up with this. So I've had an ongoing relationship with them for years. So he sent me a couple that I could. Actually,
now this one won't fit the Surface Pro. This is too small, right? It's a 7-inch.
Yeah, I think
that one and a half.
That one won't fit.
Well, let's see. If I go, I got to go corner to corner, right? On the,
yeah, I think so. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nope, I can't get all the way.
Maybe that's for the Surface 3.
Yeah, I think it's for the smaller 3.
Surface 3. Yeah.
I haven't used it on this device, but what's cool on this is you slip your hand into the back, right?
Yep.
Like this, and this goes corner to corner, and then you can hold that. And one of the things that is kind of crazy is sometimes those iPads or those small tablets can go just flying out of your hands.
Exactly.
Right as you're working on them. So it's kind of an interesting meal.
So,
pretty comfortable.
Yeah, so that one's for the Surface 3. And so if you're using OneNote and you're using a Miracast, you know, receiver, you know, it's a great tool as an instructor. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So interesting. What are these retail?
Ooh, you got me. No, you got me. I think I want to say somewhere like $35-$40, somewhere in that. If you go to laptopdesk.net, you can find out more information about that. Yes.
From LapWorks, they're called the Gripzilla OmniSoft with neoprene handle. So pretty cool. Mike, I'll have to get this to you for your iPad.
Yeah, it works with the iPad. It works really well. If
you have an iPad, Mike, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. That'd be awesome.
So I'll have to get this over to you.
It reminds me of, I can't remember what it was, but the bachelor party I was just at, it's the Dot. It's this little tiny circle that can pop up, and you stick it to the back of your phone, and it's flat normally, but then you can pop it up and stick it kind of between your fingers. So if you're watching something, you can kind of have it's a circle that would go between your fingers to make it easier to hold. It was kind of cool. It was an interesting little concept, but much smaller. I didn't even notice it was on the guy's phone, and then he was kind of just laying on the ground, and he popped it out, had it, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah, but actually, Jim, if you go to my my blog,
where's that?
I have a review of it. It's assistivetech.blogspot.com. If anyone's interested, they can get more information, and the pricing is on there and stuff.
Cool. So cool. I've been waiting to have you on so we could talk about
this.
But pretty cool. No, pretty cool. And the handle rotates, so you can do it at multiple angles. We'll get this over to Uyghur, and he can check it out.
Sounds like a plan.
Hey, the other cool little gadget I got just this week, so I was at Infotech. By the way, if you follow me, if you subscribe to my YouTube channel, I just flooded you on Sunday with eight or nine interviews that I did at Infotech on Monday. Those were a ton of fun. We haven't released them yet. They're on the page if you go to the averageguy.tv YouTube channel. You can see those interviews. A lot of fun. 20 minutes, real quick interviews. But one device that I picked up and was one of these, Gorilla mounts that you put on. Comes with a GoPro mount as well, if I wanted to put that on there. But the nice thing about that, it's got that screw, right, for the C920s. And so I actually laid this. What I did is I put this on top of a monitor pointing another direction, not straight at me, mm-hmm. but pointing an opposite direction. Like, I had a monitor here, but I wanted the camera to go this way. So it was kind of cool. I could put these two on the, so think about the monitor here, right, mm-hmm. going like that. And then I laid this one flat across the top of the monitor, so it kind of hugged the bezel on this side and then sat on top of the bezel here. And I shot the camera out across the top of that monitor, and it worked. It was awesome. Like, yeah. I was like, why is it taking me so long to buy one of these?
Because you can wrap those around anything.
Yeah, you can, right? The legs, the legs move. Mike, have you ever had one of these for your GoPro or anything like that?
Yeah, I did, and that's remember when we were doing the live Periscope on our mic stands? That's what I was using. I had wrapped it around the mic.
You have a smaller version of this one though, right? Isn't it? Or is it?
Yes, it's not that big. It's not that big. It's a little bit smaller, and the feet. I don't know if on that one, my feet are magnetic. So if you were to, like, you could, like, stick it to the fridge or you could stick it to anything metal, and which makes it's a nice little feature of the little one. But the problem is I got it too long ago, and the phone adapter doesn't stretch high enough for now the 6S Plus. So it's only useful with the GoPro now, but still nice.
Yeah, kind of handy. I could get a mount for the phone as well, and then just put that on there. But kind of cool. But again, it was one of those things. I have a regular tripod that I use when I go on the road, and that works 90% of the time, but there was one of those kinds of things that I wanted to pick up to be like, what is that tripod that you could use in any situation? And this one's tall enough, by the way, that you can sit it by, you can sit it by itself on there. You can see how big that thing is.
Yes.
You can sit that up, and it gets a pretty good height. It would be nice if it would extend, if there was some telescoping right here, to make this go up just a little bit higher. But then I think that would take away that would take away from the flexibility of this thing.
Yeah. So,
$20, Walmart.
Nice.
Yeah, it was 6 a.m. I was going to this conference, and I had forgotten that I had lost this piece to my tripod. There's that piece that comes out. It's got the little clip. It comes out. I have to buy that on Amazon. Should have it shipped so I can use a tripod. And, like, where would I go to get, like, maybe Walmart will have that replacement piece for the tripod. Nope. $20. I was like, oh yeah. This is gonna be me. So yeah, so pretty interesting, Mike. You've used yours besides wrapping it around your boom arm. Have you used it for anything else?
Yeah, time lapses. I went into a cool time lapse. They're super easy. You can fold them and set them absolutely anywhere. It's also my go-to for if I'm doing a tech video where I need to just stand in front of something and set it up. It's a perfect mount. I wish they had a 6-foot version of that you could wind around things and just fold up. If they had a super tall one, that would be cool, because then you could really get some angles, because my one thing is it's too short for me. So, yeah, if they had a 6-foot version, I'd be all over it.
I don't think it'd be that hard.
No, I don't think it would either. It would be able to pack really easy, too, because you could bend those up into, like, a circle. Or
it's just those little joints that, one bends one way, and then, the other, it bends the other.
You can twist them, so.
Yeah, they move around. You can... some interesting things you can do with it. So, anyways, check that out if you're a tripod guy at all. I'm sure, again, I'm late to the party on this. These are not new, right? I'm not saying, hey, look at this new technology. It was just one of those kinds of things that I was, in a pinch, and I thought, I'll give this thing a try. I've always wanted to try one of these. And they worked as advertised. It was pretty cool to be able to kind of just grip this thing to the monitor.
Yes.
And kind of make it work, so. Cool stuff, Brian. Any other gadgets you're looking at, or your?
I just started testing the new Microsoft Wireless Adapter 2, the Miracast, and it's been working really well. A lot smaller than the original adapter, and it was great. This week I was doing a presentation, went into the classroom. They happened to have a really nice Epson projector mounted from the ceiling. I plugged in the HDMI on one side, plugged in the other one on the USB port on the projector to power it, and then I was off and running. I mean, it was really fantastic. Easy pairing, and I was, streaming the video, the video from my Surface Pro as well as the audio, and it was just a really sweet. I mean, I can do that. I did carry my own projector just in case, but it's nice to be able to go in and just plug in and go, which is really fantastic. I mean, and I think that that is one of the, I don't know, one of the gems of, you know, the Miracast on the Microsoft side. I mean, it's just so fantastic because I don't need any support from IT to get that up and running wherever I am. You know, it's just plug in, you know, plug in and go, and it's been fantastic. I carry that. I also carry the ScreenBeam Pro with me as well, which I enjoy using, especially in scenarios where schools have legacy projectors, which has VGA ports, because the ScreenBeam Pro for education supports it's an HDMI cable to a VGA on one side, so I can use that as well, and that works really well for me. So between the two, I have really good coverage.
Yeah. You know, a couple weeks ago we mentioned I've started carrying a Chromecast with me when I travel, so that a year ago, maybe even more, Mike, we reviewed those Kingston 5-in-1. Yeah. I let you use it over the summer for a while, right? It's got an SD adapter in it. You can. It's got a battery. I think a 2200 milliamp. I think I'm getting that right. Battery. It's got so it can charge. It also will create a wireless network for you, right? And I set that up, charged it up, took it with me to DC. Actually used the battery a couple times. I've been using that Mophie battery case that I got for that. It's got the extra battery, but I think it's a 3000 in here. But I forgot this time. I was driving to the airport. You know how you're thinking about, and then I'm like, I forgot to put the case on there. And I'm like, well, okay, this will be a good test of carrying around that kind of 5-in-1 device. Mm-hmm. You know what's super handy about that 5-in-1 device? Since it's not that much bigger than a phone, in the plane, when I needed to charge it, I just drop it down in the, you know, in the seat pocket. You know, put a USB charger on the end, drop it down in the seat pocket, and it disappears. And I charged my phone all the way back from DC last night. Got to 100% by the time I was done. I think I get one good, maybe a 1.5 charges off that 2200. That's not all that much. But if I needed to, I had set up the network in advance. If I needed to, I could have plugged that Chromecast into the TV in the hotel room. I could have got that thing on the network, hooked my phone up to it, and I could have Chromecasted right to right to the TV. So I started carrying that Chromecast just for that reason. And then a wireless router. Because the Chromecast, it depends on, right? You got to hook that thing to a wireless network to make it work.
Yeah. I've been carrying this is a Netgear Jetpack for Verizon, so it gives me a hotspot wherever I am. And on occasion, this has really been fantastic. This is also I don't know the exact milliamp, but I can also use this to charge my phone. It's got a very large battery. I mean, this thing's incredible. I think I could connect up to 15 devices to this particular hotspot, which is great. And I always carry this in my bag too, because sometimes sometimes I can't get on the school's network, I was just in a scenario where I was doing a presentation and the Wi-Fi, we had 75 people in the room, and the Wi-Fi just went, just bottomed out, and I just used this all day, which was great, so it's a nice, nice gadget.
Good backup to have. Mike, have you been messing with anything gadget-wise?
One gadget and one feature. Actually, the one gadget, I had seen it on all of my paid advertisements as well, and then you posted about it, the KeySmart Swiss Army knife for your keys, and I was like, you know what, that's the motivation I need. I'm gonna grab one. And so Well, do your searching on Amazon, because if you scroll down, there's the same exact product. I mean, it's KeySmart, the same exact product for $16 instead of $19. So I grabbed that one, and I just ordered another one today because I was going to test it. I was like, okay, Hannah and I will both want one if this goes well. And it's pretty cool, pretty easy to set up.
I carry this one, and I don't know. Is it similar?
This one is more like a switchblade for you.
I wish I had it. Hannah's out right now, so she has it with her, but so I can't show. It's a little bit wonky because you think they're supposed to interlace with each other, like one then the other then the other, but they actually kind of slide in together, and they kind of one goes out one side, one goes out the other. So it's a little bit confusing to set up, but man, super cool. Especially, I'm going to get a clip, because the nice part is it has a silver ring on the end to hang your big chunky car key off of. So you've got
fob.
That. So
right, it's got a fob holder.
Yeah, it's got a little fob holder. So if you had a clip when you went out for a run, you should be able to unclip it, stick just your house keys or whatever in your pocket, and it'd be perfect. So I ordered another one. Already love that. But then, so that's the only gadget I've been playing around with. But one feature that I just wish everyone would turn on, so I'm going to talk about it. And I've just been trying to tell as many people as I can. I've been playing with it, and it's been out for a little bit, but it's been slowly rolling out depending on your device and your carrier, is VoiceOver LTE. And it's a little bit different on each device, whether it's turned on by default or whether you have to go in and turn it on. But on the iPhone, it's as simple as going into your settings and going to cellular settings and turning on LTE to be for both voice and data. And it's just been a really fun experiment because I have people, they're like, but what's the difference? I'll be like, here, call my wife real quick. And they'll talk and they're like, dude, it's like a FaceTime audio call or it's like a Skype call. It is crystal clear if you're on the same network. And it's kind of exciting because you're starting to hear that the networks are going to start playing nice with each other and try to get the integration to be where if I'm on Verizon and you're on Sprint and we're you both using voice over LTE, we can have that crystal clear communication. So right now it's still limited to your carrier to your carrier. But man, it's a lot of fun. So I've just been trying to tell people about it and I have them test it and they're like, that is awesome. It's just, you could almost use it. And my personal use for it was I was going to try and podcast with it. I was like, okay, if you could get a voice call because we're trying to interview someone on my other podcast, another couple, and they don't have Skype microphones or anything like that. I'm like, hey, if we could do a voice over LTE call, it's crystal clear enough that it would be a good recording. So it's kind of fun. So that's the only other feature I've been playing around with. And Jim, do you have it turned on your phone or is it even an option? No.
I don't know. I haven't looked.
Okay.
I have it turned on mine.
Okay. All right. And are you on Verizon?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Okay. Because Verizon, they had voice over LTE, but in 9.3, they finally came out with Wi-Fi calling. And the option is buried. But they have Wi-Fi calling now for your Verizon phones on the iPhone, which is nice. But for Sprint, I actually had it on Sprint before I had it on Verizon. And me and my dad just loved it. We thought it was the coolest thing. It was just such a crystal clear.
Where am I going to go to turn it on?
You're going to go to, now it's see, and this is where it differs.
Is yep. Cellular?
Yeah. Settings, cellular, and then no. That's not it.
Yeah, I don't see it there.
Settings, phone. Go down to, it's down there on her phone. And no, it's not there either. All right. I've been doing this every day, and now I can't find out where it's at.
Well, we'll look it up.
Yeah.
We'll find it. No, I haven't done much of that. I don't make enough phone calls to have it even matter. Like, I just don't talk on my phone. But to your point, we've been talking about this a lot in the podcast community.
Oh, yeah. So if you go to I have phone. I'm on Verizon phone and Wi-Fi calling.
Oh, it is under phone for me. It's turned off.
There's Wi-Fi calling, but this is the voiceover. See, and 9.3 moved these all around because it was for sure under that cellular option. So when I find it, I guess I will mention it.
Yeah. I wonder how many people turn that on and use that.
Well, and that's my thing is no one knows about it. Or the non-techies do. So
yeah. By turning this on, Mike, when will it use it? Whenever I'm on Wi-Fi?
Yes. Okay. So, but there's a caveat to Wi-Fi calling. I keep Wi-Fi calling off. If you are in a spot that you have no service but you have Wi-Fi, it's fantastic. But you have to understand that when you leave Wi-Fi, it will drop the call. It will not reconnect and use your cellular network. Okay. So you have to stay in your Wi-Fi zone. So it's been that was why I turned it off. I would start a call at home, go to the car, and I would drop the call. So I left that off. But the voice over LTE part, and someone asked who's doing it, all the major networks now, I believe, have it rolled out. And it just kind of depends on your device and if you can turn it on. But it's odd now that 9.3 moved the setting on Verizon. So because it used to be right there.
Well, interesting. Yeah, no, I don't. I need to make a call when I want to call. Where is that?
Yeah, it's still under cellular, but there's one more option. Now you have a cellular data options tab. You tap that, and then under enable LTE, you can do data and voice, or completely off. So you do data and voice. And the nice part is it doesn't use your data plan, so it's not like if you make a call, you're going to start rolling through your data limits, which is kind of nice. And then they've also updated all of their foreign international plans, which is a conversation for a whole other show. But it's gotten a lot easier now with LTE to do those international plans. A lot cheaper, too.
Yeah. Brian, I'm thinking when I have two kids leaving our plan, and I'm going to get, when they leave, I'm going to get some kind of device, or I'm just going to purchase the hotspot option on my phone. Because it's ridiculous. I'm in spots now where I really need it. And as an example, I was trying to podcast down at Northwest Missouri State, and I jumped on their Wi-Fi, and it was 0.7 up and 1.2 down. And I'm like, ooh, this is not going to work.
It's not going to work. No.
So I got my phone out, jumped on. I got an LTE connection. Right. It was 10 up and 10 down. Yeah. It's like,
yeah.
It's going to get faster. Yeah. So
that was one of the benefits of moving when I went to Verizon, is having that as an option. Obviously, it's going against your data limit, but just having hotspot on without an extra charge was nice, because I was on Sprint too, and I was like, oh, well, it's nice having unlimited, but you do have to pay that extra $30 a month for any sort of hotspot capabilities.
Yeah. And the reason why I got the Netgear or the Jetpack is, you know, just battery life, because it just it'll eat away your battery when you turn on that hotspot. That's the only negative. Yeah.
Yeah, I've done it, and I'll plug it in via USB. So then it's charging, and then it'll pull the connection down through USB, which is kind of cool. So at least Mac to Mac, it works that way. I'm not sure. I haven't used it with a Windows machine.
Yeah.
So Mark says apparently they not only get free healthcare in Canada, they also get free hotspot included with their cell plans. So another advantage to living
in Canada. Well, that's like here. Verizon does that. And all of them, it just counts towards your data plan. Yeah. So like, I can turn it on, it'll just count towards it. But free.
Sprint isn't that way, though.
No, Sprint, because you're unlimited probably, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if they gave you unlimited everything and then you could tether it, now that would be sweet. And back in the day when you could jailbreak your iPhone and do that, it was awesome.
It's $20 to turn it on, so it's not like it's all that much.
Right.
But some good stuff. Some good stuff going on in chat. Yeah, some of you noticed the podcasting cat showed up. So Pippin was here a little bit earlier.
I saw that, yes.
He jumped up and loves to watch the podcast. He has moved off camera at the moment. He's still right there. If I could poke him right there. Now he's trying to bite me. And he loves to come up on the desk and catch us on the podcast. So that is my cat, my black cat, Pippin. Well, guys, I think that we'll call that a wrap for this part of the show.
Excellent.
Ryan, nothing we missed. We didn't miss anything from your side, did we?
No, so, you know, playing around with new stuff, but I'll keep your interest peaked for the next.
Yeah, hold some back so that we can get back maybe sooner than a year.
Sounds good.
Now. Get you,
always a lot of fun.
Get you on here this summer. Mike, anything else that you're thinking about? Anything you got going on your side besides trying to heal from a broken leg and some other things?
I learned that when you apply to take the bar, it is the most self, just the amount of observation you do on yourself over the past how many years. They want everything. They want to know every little detail. If you sneeze, they want to know about it, and they want the date and the year. But, I mean, every traffic violation down to the month and the year, everything, they want it documented. So it's been a fun week for me as I try and get that application in by next week. But it's fun. It's just a whole crazy different application that I've ever done before. So,
well, good luck to you.
Well,
it's like
it's
like the TSA pre-TSA inspection, right?
Right.
They want to know everything. I don't know. I've never done that.
I need to get on that program, by the way. That sounds pretty nice.
Something like that. Yeah, I don't know. If you fly out of Omaha, it doesn't pay. Like, could you fly through Omaha? I mean, every time I go through Omaha Airport, it's like I'm TSA, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
It just goes super fast. We're too small.
$5 isn't too bad.
That's true.
Yeah, if you get your company to pay for it, even better.
Sure. You know. Yeah, no, for sure. Well, I mentioned earlier in the show, Brian, hang around for a little bit.
Okay.
Can you hang out for some post-show?
Oh, yeah,
okay,
sure.
Perfect. So I mentioned earlier in the show, if you want to give us some reasons why you listen to our show, what is it about it that you like? We talked about a little bit of survey. Send me an email, jim@theaverageguy.tv. Although PTD was trying to do that earlier. Why do we do that to ourselves? And his emails wouldn't show up to that account, but send them to me, jim@theaverageguy.tv, and we'll try and do that. Or you can tweet them at me, Jim, at Jay Collison. Of course, theaverageguy.tv platform, both web and media hosting, powered by Maple Grove Partners. If you're thinking about web hosting or setting up a WordPress plan or setting up a podcast, whatever, get some great, secure, high-speed, reliable access from some trusted folks here, folks who know our network and know it well. MapleGrovePartners.com, and a plan start at $10. And head over there. You can get some more information, MapleGrovePartners.com. I want to thank Roger over at WLMN Radio out of Grafton, West Virginia, for broadcasting us, streaming us live on terrestrial radio. And if you're listening in Grafton, send us a note. Like, we want to hear from you. Please send us a note. And you can also listen to Home Gadget Geeks on the Android iPhone apps, now available. Both the recorded version and the live versions are available on a single app. Search Home Gadget Geeks in the Play Store, iTunes App Store, or you can just go to homegadgetgeeks.com, and the links are right there. You can get it done. Spreaker built that app for us, and we want to thank LastPass for their sponsorship of the mobile app. And if you're using that, thanks for, I know we get 9 or 10 of you. I get every live program, I get a note from Spreaker that says, hey, you had 9 people listening live. So I know some of you are doing it. And we'll thank LastPass for doing that as well. Don't forget, if you're purchasing on Amazon, theaverageguy.tv/Amazon or theaverageguy.tv/AmazonCA if you're for our Canadian folks. Mark, that's for you. I did that one just for you out there. And it's available in Canada. Well, no UK, but those two are options. We want to thank you for using those affiliate links. And we want to say we're out here every Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out at theaverageguy.tv live. If you want to catch the latest Mac news or whatever Mike Wieger is doing over there at Open Mic Night, you can catch that on the 2980network.com. And Suit and Scrubs, got anything coming up new, Mike, on Suit and
Yes,
Scrubs?
We do. It's awesome. Finally.
Nice.
Yeah,
good.
Got one in the can. We're right. We're trying to get them in the can so we can not be so bad about it. But yeah,
awesome. We'll have to go out. It's I can download it right now.
Oh no, not right now. It's in the can.
Dude,
it's ready to go.
Why are you teasing me like that?
Yeah, I know.
What are you?
Have to wait
to
hear some good stories. There's some.
Oh no, my phone's broken. It's orange. Okay, so we're out here, 8 p.m.
Have a happy holiday too, if you guys celebrate that. If you guys celebrate Easter, have a great Easter weekend.
Yeah, and don't forget, we did have a few join the March Madness bracket for the 2980 tag.
Yeah, it was a night before thing, but we got a few.
I know we did get a few, and
we got a few in.
I think where are you at? We didn't. We said we were going to talk about this last week, and we failed to talk about it on the show.
I think I'm near the top. I'm in one other one with my other job.
You're 2 and I'm 3. I think that's what that boils down to right now. Here, we'll take a quick look. It's too late to get in now, so this is pretty senseless. But actually, I'm 2 and you're 2. We're tied.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're tied for second place. We have 48 points there, and so we. You know, if you guys are listening, although it was the night before, it wasn't really fair because we did that the night before.
Yeah.
And we'd love to get you in. We will do fantasy football again this year. You might want to gear up. If you're listening, you might want to pay attention as we get closer to the league. When do we start fantasy? When is that? August?
Oh, we'll get it rolling around August. We'll get everything started. We'll start to talk about it, get it set up, and then...
That'll be here before we know it.
Yeah.
It's going to be August fast this year. We, speaking of August, we're out here every Thursday night, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, on the TheAverageGuy.tv live. Great guests, Brian. Thanks again for coming on, and with that, we'll say goodnight,
everybody.
That
was my pleasure.
Yeah, you bet.